Getting tickets online can be far too complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know who to trust. That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place. You can easily find the seats you want for the price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. You can make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source for everything from sports to concerts, comedy, and theater. Of course, USC football, which we talk about here. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. By far, it's the easiest way to shop for tickets. I'm looking at it right now for USC at UCLA. Of course, in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl. You got some Row 36 2E tickets for $111. That's the best deal. You can go for the lowest price. Tickets as cheap as $60 in row 65. So get all your information you need about the tickets for the game on SeatGeek. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. If you download the app, enter promo code USC today. That's promo code USC for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets.
Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, welcome to the Peristyle Podcast. On a Tuesday, we're going to talk some USC Georgia football like we always do every week on the Peristyle Podcast with Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist for us here at USCFootball.com. You guys had a few questions for Dan this week. We'll try to get to as many as we can. Podcast at USCFootball.com is the email address, or you can call or text us at 424-254-9141. We got Keely Yore feeling a little under the weather, so it's just going to be me and Dan this week, but hopefully Keely will be able to bounce back and make it back to practice today. But let's welcome in Dan Weber, because there's a lot that we got to talk about. What is up, Dan? How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing better than the USC program, unfortunately, since I can say that. But man, oh man, you don't know where to start, do you?
It's hard. Yes, there's so many things. It was funny. This morning I was doing a recruiting podcast with Gerard Martinez. You can check that out up on the site. It's for our VIP members, for premium members. Had to squeeze in a Mason in Ireland interview because local radio, they wanted me to talk about that. I'm going to speak in Jeff Fellinger's class this evening, not necessarily about the state of USC football, but I'm sure that's going to come up. We got practice that we're going to get to today. We got to obviously do this show. We want to talk about Cal, but there's so many other things going on. And we'll start off, Dan. Breaking news. So we reported and we were hearing, yesterday that Levi Jones was going to be kicked off the team, or was kicked off the team. Turns out it's not only just that. He was also arrested for a misdemeanor charge up in Pasadena. It was just a bail of $250, but don't think that's related. But another young, promising star no longer on the squad, Dan. So I tried to get a spokesperson from USC to confirm what we were hearing, and they declined, saying that Clay Helton would address it after practice today. So when we get back from practice or after practice, we'll find out for sure exactly whatever Clay says. But I wanted to get your thoughts on Levi Jones no longer being on the team, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, they had talked about a kind of mysterious hip ailment, whatever, 2 weeks ago, and then improving and whatever, but then he doesn't show up in either of the last two games. I mean, and it's like, where is he? What's going on? We're not really getting any kind of a real story as to to what's going on, and apparently there have been other issues that haven't been reported that, we're hearing about now. We're hearing that, his dad, former, Super Bowl winning, NFL linebacker, who's had a couple of kids that have gone into the NFL, not very happy at all about the USC program. I know, was it last week? He wanted to go, visit with some of the NFL people that he saw at a practice, the scouts, you can see them around the edge of the field. And he started heading there, and the guards stopped him and said, no, you're a parent. You got to stay over here. And he said, yeah, but I'm also in the NFL, blah, blah, blah. So he was told, stay behind the ropes, buddy.
Get near the media, because that would be terrible if you...
That would be the other thing. He would have had to walk in front of us.
Such a crime.
Anyway, yeah, so he got stopped. I'm amazed that they immediately realized who he was, because he's sort of a... You know, a hybrid. He's sort of an NFL guy too, but he's a parent, and you're hearing that he's really not happy with different things that are going on at USC. Who knows all the stories that are, been involved. I mean, every time they play Levi, he does something well. It's kind of like, well, there's just nowhere to play him. It's like Paiea. He does a lot of things really well, but it's just so hard to get them on the field. So I think there's that sense of, how can a kid like that get on the field and what's happening off the field, to make it difficult for him, to move on in this situation. I mean, there's just a lot of frustration and unhappiness with the program right now. Outside, inside the program, you name it, it's not a happy place at all.
No, it's not. And, that's unfortunate. He was someone I always liked watching, always wanted to see more of Levi Jones. And seeing that exchange with his dad, you kind of got the feeling like this is not going well. With the security guard and his dad, they had to call someone over. That wasn't very nice. So Levi Jones no longer on the team. We'll see. USC is pretty stacked at linebacker, but still he's someone that had a lot of ability. We'll see what, kind of that followed. But it's just kind of like a... It's just another thing it's going on. And I feel like with Clay Helton, there hasn't been like the things piling on. Like we saw, like with Lane Kiffin, there was always something, deflated footballs or changing numbers. There was always like these things that just kept piling on and piling on. Obviously with Steve Sarkisian, that ended pretty quickly. But there was things that were piling on. But there's kind of things that are happening now with a lot of young players that aren't going to be in the program anymore. And then just the talk, I feel like Clay Helton's lost the fan base, Dan. I mean, I did a Mason and Ireland show, and that's all they're talking about. That's USC's flagship station. That's where they are, and usually they're going to be somewhat positive about the program. And you have John Ireland, who's a UCLA guy, Steve Mason, an SC guy, and they're both just talking like, yeah, it's obviously over. Similar to what your column was after the game, and similar to what Colin Coward said a couple weeks ago in our studio. It just seems like the support for Clay Helton has diminished so quickly. I don't know. We'd heard that the administration doesn't want to make any moves, but man, it's just at this point, I don't know where the support is coming from, and maybe not even his own players who seem to like him very well, but it just seems like it's eroded from everywhere, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're to that point where if you come in, as we've heard, and announce to the players, that you're coming back and that the athletic director has said you're coming back, and the player's general reaction is not, oh, good. But it's more the other way. I don't know where you go from that. I mean, what do you do in terms of, I think that, the big danger now, I think a lot of season ticket holders have turned their back on the program because they basically had their seats taken away, for next year. I think the big danger is twofold in a lot of ways, is what happens to this recruiting class. And I know USC's made some bad decisions over the years based on one recruiting class or the next recruiting class or whatever. But if you lose all the guys you've lost to people just leaving the program for all those reasons that you've lost them, and then you start losing current players who – the rumblings are that people are going to transfer, and then you have, a difficult time recruiting that next year's class because everybody's going to be recruiting against USC, especially the kids that have committed to, hey, why would you go there? You have no idea who's going to be coaching you most of your college career. You get to a point where, I think we were just figuring that the downside of doing something is greater if you're the athletic director with no president and with all the other things that are going on with the lawsuits and the settlements and the board of trustees having to find a president and all that, that doing something, you know, major with the football coach is not something you'd want to do right now. And that the downside of doing that and having maybe a new president come in and say, what, you did what, and you're going to spend how much money and all of that. I think now they're close to the place where the downside of not doing that is greater, where you might get a new president here in the spring. And if, you know, they can't sell any season tickets and they're, you know, having trouble getting the people who put up the, you know, pledged the, you know, the founder suites, $10 million, you know, to come through, and you're having trouble recruiting and, you know, you're sort of a laughingstock program, the new president might say, what the heck were you doing to allow this to happen? So the incentive for allowing it to happen may be more, you know, negative, you know, for anybody in the athletic department than the incentive of going ahead and you know, and doing it. So I don't know. I think the tipping point has been reached. And as you said, I don't know anybody in the fan base that's supportive. And if the team starts, you know, breaking down in the media, I mean, I think if you look at the national media, I don't think there's a one, you know, that thinks that it should happen, that Clay should be back. And yet the only thing they're throwing out there is, I think, the completely bogus figure of $15 million buyout, which is just completely silly. That would only mean if you had still 5 years at $3 million a year guaranteed. I don't think there's any way. USC didn't guarantee the first contract all those years, and they're not going to, you know, guarantee the extension. I think the extension was more to say, for a recruiting statement, that this staff, this coach would be around for these years. But I would, you know, bet anything that that was not guaranteed. Those were not guaranteed years. So I don't think the buyout is anywhere nearly as big a deal as the figure that's out there that says that the buyout's $15 million. USC may not be the, you know, the smartest negotiators in the world. They're probably not that dumb. That they owe Clay $15 million. So I don't know.
You would think not. I mean, as soon as I heard the extension in February, I didn't think there was going to be a big buyout because it just wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. But, you know, we'll see. I don't buy that number either. We got a question from Steve. So we're going to try to answer all your questions. We're not going to speculate on who the next head coach is going to be and all that stuff. So I'm going to skip those. Sorry about that. I'll send Dan to his column if you want to ask him some of those, but okay, we're not going to talk about that. Steve says, I just saw this morning that Colorado is planning to fire Mike McIntyre at the end of the season. Apparently, 5-5 gets you fired at Colorado, but at USC, we're told the program is quote-unquote good shape. Are we living in some sort of alternate universe in which Colorado's administration, athletic director, and board of trustees care more about their football program than USC does? If this is the new reality, then we are in for a slow and painful decline. Thanks and fight on, Steve. And just to let you know, that report was by a Denver radio station. It looks to be erroneous. The administration for Colorado came out and said that was not true.
Here's my take on it. I read it carefully, what the administration said. And it basically, I think what they said was, we haven't fired him yet. And we haven't made the final absolute decision to fire him yet. But we might. Is if you tried to read between the lines, they in no way said that, you know, he's coming back. They gave you one of those, we're going to evaluate, and we always evaluate, and blah, blah, blah. But that report, well, you know, they basically said the report was premature. They didn't say it was completely wrong. I don't, in trying to read what their statement was, it was one of those non-denial denials. I think somebody has heard and has let the word out, even though Colorado's not ready to do it yet. But I think the writing is on the wall there, which is amazing. If that's true, and, you know, and if Colorado, you know, the guy, I mean, this is where you hurt yourself. You get off to a 5-0 start and everybody thinks you're pretty good and you're really not. And I still remember the Colorado fans went nuts when I did that five questions for the Colorado site and told them they weren't that good. And if USC plays even reasonably well, USC's going to win the game. And they thought I was crazy. We're 5-0. What are you talking about? We're ranked. You're not. I said, come on, you guys. But they got their hopes up so much at Colorado that they're not taking it well, obviously,
no,
to say the least. They're taking it really badly. But, yeah, but they're doing something, apparently. I think they're going to do something. And that would be amazing because how much harder is it to put together a program at Colorado than USC and the whole difference in traditions and everything else. But if Colorado does something and USC just kind of sits there in the face of if things go south, I mean, if recruiting really struggles, if players start transferring, and if the finish is, you know, I mean, you got the UCLA game this week. Who knows how that's going to turn out? That would be an interesting contrast, and that's a really good question to say, what about, look at Colorado and look at USC.
Yeah.
And you're right.
McIntyre, just for you, and George and Oxnard had the same question. He texted that in too. So they were both, thank you guys both for that question. Colorado, Mike McIntyre has finished last in the conference four times and first once. So he has won a conference title. But it's usually feast or famine, and there's been a lot more famine than feast over there. So we'll see what goes on with him. Steve,
Been trying to put together new, you know, facilities and raising money and doing some really nice things with Folsom Field. And they made a commitment that they want football to be good. And then, so, you know, now they're saying, you know, if the coach says, We need this, we need this, and then they give you that, they're going to expect something back from that, and they're not getting it in their mind. So, that would happen this quickly in a season where they were just so, you know, excited about things. At least USC didn't have that problem. The way the season started, nobody got excited early, so there's no big letdown. But the problem at USC is, everybody says, see, we saw this coming. It was all Sam Darnold. Once he left, there's nothing, you know, left to fall back on. And, the fan base, I'm a little surprised at how completely turned off the fan base, USC fan base is. I mean, that it just completely shut down. There is no enthusiasm and no sense of this staff can get it right. There's none of that. Nobody thinks that.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a lot of people in the Rose Bowl in USC colors is my guess. But you mentioned Sam Darnold. That's a good segue. Stephen Poway, a different Steve. If Sam Darnold had returned this season, do you think USC would have lost to ASU, losing by 3, and to Cal, losing by 1? The reason why I ask is because winning those two games would have the Trojans sitting at 6-2, comfortably atop the Pac-12 South Division, with both Clay Helton and the Trojans firmly in control of their own destiny. Wow. Fight on, Stephen Poway.
Well, Steve, all they had to do was A, not call the speed option that they'd never run all year deep in their own territory against Arizona State and give them a touchdown, and not snap the ball over the head of JT Daniels in the Cal game. And they win both of those games, and they're 7-3. And you're right, 6-2. I mean, any one thing that would have happened, but yeah, having Ronald Jones come back, you know, having Sam come back. I mean, Sam was better suited to quarterback in this USC program because basically, what did Sam do? Sam kept plays alive that broke down until receivers could find open spaces, and Sam could beat the rush. But now you've got a drop-back quarterback. Although, I mean, to be honest, JT, I thought, eluded the rush pretty well. He ran the ball a few times. I mean, I think they need to do that more with him. But the offense just isn't suited, you know, to take advantage of that. But, yeah, obviously, with Sam, they win a couple of more games. I'm thinking with Sam, you're 14-3 or whatever you're up against Texas, they probably win that game. So, you know, with Sam, you probably win the Stanford game. I kind of think Stanford's not going to hold USC to 3 points with Sam in the game. You know, you got to be able to coach them up. You know, you're going to have a new quarterback every once in a while, and you're going to have a little bit different way of attacking. There are things that JT does better than Sam, but they haven't been able to always take advantage of them because of the breakdowns and the fact that something always goes wrong. And you have to have more of a team-oriented attack, you know, with JT. Sam, you know, Sam made up for a lot of faults in the USC offense and a lot of, you know, inability to, you know, put it all together. But, you know, Sam could overcome that just because of his physical skills and just, you know, just who he is. The same thing he's doing with the Jets. Sam didn't play last week, and the Jets were behind 31-0 at the half. Whatever was that? I think that's the score.
Yeah, to Matt Barkley in Buffalo.
Yeah, Matt Barkley just tearing them up. So I mean, Sam. Yes, absolutely, without a doubt, no question about it. They would have won those games.
Yeah, I think you're right there. We got a lot of TOA questions. Jeff, the math teacher. Trojan Ray. We'll put those in Dan's column coming later on, but I'll play you this voicemail one from our friend Joan and kind of get you going there. Here you go, Dan.
Hey, Ryan and Dan. It's Joan Levis. How are you guys this morning or today on Tuesday? I just have some questions or statements. I'm just wondering how the administration can sit by on the sidelines and watch Helton, and more importantly, let the team disintegrate. You know, as stress seems to be getting to Helton when he says in a press conference, one of Toa is one of the greatest loves of his life. That may be, but that's really not a place to express that. And his leadership and discipline are lacking in a team that desperately wants leadership and discipline. These young men need that. There's infighting on the sidelines and unsportsmanlike conduct, and that's not the MO of these kids. It's really, really sad and embarrassing to watch. And for you guys, as a wise man once said, what is really going on here? Thanks a lot. Love my team. Love the tradition of Trojan football, Trojan sports. Fight on.
Hey, you got to give Joan credit. She puts her name on it. She's not making up a name or anonymously. I will say this. The difficulty with the premise of Joan's questions and statements is she's talked about the administration. And when you look at USC right now, you have no idea what does that mean. Who is that? How does it all go together? I don't think we know. I mean, that's the, you know, I mean, we found this problem when trying to address some of the issues with the Coliseum renovation. And you couldn't tell who was in charge. You know, well, so-and-so was here, but he's gone, and so-and-so wasn't here. And so I don't even know what we're talking about when we talk about the USC administration. I don't even know where that fits in. I mean, this is like kind of a big ship that's kind of steered its own course at this point, and we'll see where it ends up. As far as I think the most difficult issue with Clay's comment about, you know, Toa's one of the great loves of his life is who cares? It doesn't have anything to do whether he should be the center at USC or not. That's neither here nor there. I mean, you know, just, and if he is one of the great loves of your life, why would you keep sending him out into a situation where he's proven he can't really do it? And here's a guy who's proven himself at other positions. And I know Toa himself said, when we asked him about, is he, you know, talked to Clay about, you know, playing another position, and he said he didn't want to take somebody else's job, or he didn't want, you know, that shouldn't be Toa's worry. Toa basically by August, it should have been decided, okay, this is not the position for you. We need, you know, every snap to be perfect. We got a freshman quarterback. He's going to be a dropback quarterback. We're not going to do some of the things that we did with Sam, where people, you know, who tried to rush actually hurt themselves because Sam always beat them, and then you're playing 11 on 10, that kind of thing. So that decision should have been made early. And whether you like Toa or you don't like him, that should have nothing to do whether he's your center or not. That's just, it's totally irrelevant. So not only is, you know, is it a sign of, you know, kind of an emotional approach to things and a personal approach, but it's like detached from the reality of how do we put the best football team on the field with the most chance for success. And you can't say, oh, he only had a couple of bad snaps when the one snap cost you the game. I mean, there's you can't say that. That's irrelevant in terms of the other snaps that were good. If the one bad one cost you the game, that's all that matters. The rest of it doesn't matter. You assume you're going to get it perfectly. And if you don't, you got to do something about that. And that there's not that ability to do that. And then as far as it's shocking, there's not a lot of talking, and there's not a lot of trash talking. There's not a lot of, you know, over-the-top competition in practice. And then all of a sudden it breaks out when they get into games, and you're not sure if they're trying to make up for what doesn't happen in practice, if they're trying to overcompensate. But that's not what we see in practice. So here they are, you know, in games, and it's constant jawing. And it's like, it's just, and to say, when you ask about, I asked, you know, Clay about that, and he said, well, both teams are competitive, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but only one team got unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. The other one didn't. Only one team, you know, killed itself with those penalties, that bad field position. The other team didn't. So, you know, maybe Cal does it better. You know, they were smarter. You know, they had Iman on the side, and, you know, I'm sure they got to him. But they didn't do anything that got them a flag. And, you know, that basically saved the game for them. And USC just, Pete Carroll rule was, you know, number one rule, never do anything that hurts the team. Never. And that rule is violated all the time. And yet USC is getting better on penalties. It's just the inappropriate, you know, over-emotional, frustrating reaction has to stop. And if that starts with the coaches, that's why, and Clay talked about, that's why they put coach in front of your name. Yeah, that's why they put coach in front of your name. And just being able to win the argument when you say, hey, you can't throw him out of the game. He's the other number eight who got an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. We have two number eights. And yeah, they both got unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, but you can't throw one of them out because you think both of them are on him. Okay, you won that argument, but did you really, when you have to say, both of our number eights got unsportsmanlike conduct penalties? Come on.
Yeah. that was, at least the Pac-12's ref got that right eventually, but that was kind of funny. Yeah, two number eights got penalties here. All right, we got a question from John. I think what makes the loss to Cal even more frustrating are the comments from Clay Helton afterwards. I'm wondering what Dan thinks of the following quote from Clay Helton. Quote, I'm sorry for the 5-5 season right now, but better days are to come. Programs I've seen across the country win a Rose Bowl, win a Pac-12 championship, and then have an offseason and come right back. Does he really view 5-5 as an offseason? And is this the kind of attitude a coach at USC should have? This sounds like the philosophy that works at a school like Michigan State or Washington State, but USC, seriously? Or maybe it matches the philosophy of an administration that reduces the seating capacity at the Coliseum. If these are the expectations of all involved with the USC football program, I wish someone would tell us so we can stop expecting greatness and perhaps turn our attention to other things. John.
Yeah, I think the first part of that, Clay was trying to attach himself to what happened at Notre Dame when they went, you know, the 4-8 and got routed and had a lot of injuries, and Kelly was forced to change his coaches and get rid of a bunch of coaches and all that. I mean, we haven't heard from Clay that, you know, I'm going to do that part of it. But I think that was with Notre Dame game coming up. I think that was a reference to, hey, they had a really, you know, off season, and now they're unbeaten in the playoffs as far as everything is concerned. But I think that's kind of irrelevant in terms of, you know, where this USC program is. I mean, I think, first of all, I think the circumstances are much more difficult. That Notre Dame, you know, they did a wonderful job renovating their stadium, but their fans are Notre Dame fans. You know, they don't have the choice of going to the Lakers or the Dodgers or the Rams or the Chargers or whoever, or hockey teams or whatever. They're Notre Dame fans. They're built in. They're not going to lose them. USC, you know, is in a really tough situation. It's in a great situation in a lot of ways, but when you go south, they're in a tough situation. They're competing for, you know, the entertainment dollars and the, you know, the sports dollars and the attention, and it's only so much time and, you know, space and for media to cover anybody. And once you get, you know, and let's face it, LA is a star town. You know, it's a, you know, you better be on the marquee. And if you're not on the marquee, and you're not one of the people on the marquee, you might as well be nowhere. And that's kind of where USC is now. And obviously college football is there, as Joey Kaufman came up with, the 13 losses is the most ever for both LA college football team going into this game. So, you know, not only do you have the Chargers in town, back in town, and the Rams back in town, that wasn't happening a decade ago, you've got a lot of tough. So 5-5 is not just a blip. It's the trajectory of the program. I think it's pretty obvious that trajectory is downward. And USC is right now looked at by the rest of the Pac-12 as, this is our chance. You know, not only can we go in there and recruit kids away from USC, but we can beat USC. And we don't have to be, you know, talented as they are, but we're going to beat them. And so you see on the sidelines, like the last two losses at the Coliseum, the Arizona State coaches and players and the Cal coaches and players just had a sense, we're going to beat USC. They're nobody to be afraid of. We're going to do things, you know, we're tougher, we're smarter, we're better coached. And they believe it. And I don't think USC can allow itself to be in that position. I think it's a really difficult spot for USC to be in, where all your rivals just think this is the time to get you. You know, and USC's done nothing to pull out of this. I mean, it's like, if stuff is happening like that, you have to respond, and you have to deal with it in a way that says, that's not true. We're going to show you we're better than you. But they didn't, you know. I mean, let's face it, against Cal, USC should have walked off at halftime 27-0 up. You know, they gave up the field goal with a crazy, idiotic fake field goal, you know, play. And then and then the fumble at the 10-yard line in the last minute, where, you know, Amon-Ra is trying to be a hero instead of just taking the first down. And you got a minute to get in from the 10. And so those, now you're only up 14-0. If you're up 27-0, Cal hasn't scored that many points in like four games or whatever. They know they're lost. The game's over. But they're down only 14-0. They think they've got a chance, and then USC gives them the chance. I mean, like, Cal didn't earn that.
No.
USC gave it to them.
Yeah.
So you know, no, I mean,
a little frustrated. Yeah, I know. We're all
there. It's just okay.
Here's a next voicemail question for you.
Hey guys, this is Sir Eric of Troy in Rancho Cucamonga. Got a quick question for Dan. Hey Dan, I know that players can show loyalty to their current coach and everything. Sometimes just simply because they're afraid not to, you know, being benched or something like that. But I'm wondering if you have any idea if some of the players themselves are just not happy with this coaching staff and just feeling as though this is not what they signed up for at all. Have you gotten that sense? If there's been anybody bold enough to say so, or at least privately show that that they just don't want the help and staff anymore? I'm curious to know about that. Fight on, guys, and thanks so much for the show.
Yeah, Sir Eric, I think the rumblings are there. I mean, you'd have to, because some of the kids are getting blamed for things that really aren't their responsibility. And I mean, I'm personally offended by the number of people on the PC who want to blame JT Daniels. And I just think that's one of the best 18-year-old freshman quarterback seasons anybody's ever had, considering how little support, you know, that most games they can't run the ball, and most games they don't do a great job pass protecting. And, you know, the two of the key plays in the game against Cal, you know, USC's pass protecting with six guys, Cal's rushing six, and we know who won that battle twice. I mean, JT didn't have a chance. And yet people want to, you know, he's just not the right guy, or he's not Sam. Well, no, he wasn't supposed to be Sam. He does different things from Sam. He does things really well, a lot of them. He's not getting a chance to do that. I mean, if you're, you know, any one of these kids, you've got to be really disappointed in the way this season has gone. If you're Cam Smith, who, you know, came back, you know, for his senior year, you know, it's been tough. He's been trying to be, you know, a leader. I mean, this is a team where the, you know, the players have to decide that they're going to get rid of Nopez November. It really shouldn't be a call that the players make. So you're really asking a lot, you know, from players to kind of decide things. And so I think, are they unhappy and saying, this is not what I signed up for? You bet. Are there reasons for them to feel like, okay, this is going to come around? We had some bad breaks and whatever. I mean, yeah, obviously there've been a lot of injuries, and, you know, they've shot themselves in the foot more than they've had bad breaks, you know, go against them. Obviously, like the Cal game, you get a terrible call by two terrible Pac-12 officials who were right on the play on the sideline, where the receiver comes down with half his foot on the line. It's obvious to anybody. I mean, you didn't even have to be watching it that closely. You realized he couldn't have come down inbounds where his feet were. Could not have possibly. You didn't have to even see where it actually touched down. It couldn't have been. So they both get it wrong. And during the interminable replay review, is when Biggie, you know, gets caught on the sidelines and jawing with him. I'm sure Biggie knew it wasn't a catch. He's pissed off about the call. And so, you know, the officials, they get no, you know, they say, oh, okay, it wasn't a catch, but still it's going to be a first down because of what Biggie did. So you got a bad break, but then you compound it with, you know, with the penalty. And that's kind of the way, you know, this season has gone. They've gotten some bad breaks, but an awful lot of it has been, you know, contributed by USC, by, you know, either positively or just not doing, you know, the right things in practice and not being prepared, you know, in games. And, you know, how often we've heard, for example, they did something we didn't see on film. We weren't ready for it. And you think, come on, that, you know, my goodness. I mean, it's just, you don't almost know what to say when you hear that. You know, you just think, how badly prepared are these kids going into games? I mean, and it's like, if it's not on film, we can't prepare for it. Instead of make them prepare for you, you know, do what you do so well that you can do it under any circumstances and you're ready for anything that they can possibly do. And you're going to just do what you do. And that doesn't seem to be the way this goes. And that doesn't work. I mean, you got to know who you are, how you're going to win football games, and what you have to do, you know, in practice, in spring football, in the summer. I mean, when you look back at it now, spring football was like a wipeout. I mean, what did they accomplish? I mean, you didn't have your guy who's going to be your starting quarterback, but you basically had a spring where the two returning quarterbacks came out of spring with no confidence at all, and the team had no confidence in them. But if you're going to come back and say, okay, JT Daniels is probably going to be our quarterback, you have to be able to run the ball, and you have to be able to pass protect. And you could have done a better job in spring working on those two things. And I didn't get the sense that either of those things happened. Because JT Daniels, if he's got a running attack that's really solid, the play-action game becomes so much more difficult to defend. And everything has changed. USC had to be able to be the run-first team Clay said it was going to be, and it wasn't. And that's on this coaching staff. They had to be able to get that done. I mean, these players, the offensive line might not be as athletic and as good as they were evaluated coming out of high school, but they're not that bad.
No.
And they could have been made into a unit that could function well enough to be able to run the ball against whoever they play decently.
Yeah.
Enough to make the play-action passing game really solid. That they couldn't do that allowed people to just sit back. And, you know, and knowing that if they come, they might be able to get there, but if they just sit back, every throw is a really, really difficult throw that USC has to make.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Dan. We got one from Jason in Longhorn Country. This is actually a positive spin, so wait for it. He said, at this point, anybody with eyes can see that the coaching staff is struggling. The team lacks discipline. The team lacks mental toughness. The starting lineup has nothing to do with who the best player is at each position, and I could go on and on. It's going to get to the positive part, don't worry. But these points have all been beaten to death. In an effort to steer the conversation in a more positive direction, can we talk about how great of a season Chris Brown is putting together? I mean, seriously, is he the offensive MVP at this point? Fight on, Jason in Longhorn Country.
He just keeps getting better. I mean, I'd always was a little worried. I mean, he had maybe one of the best games we've ever seen last year in that first Stanford game. And then maybe it didn't quite happen all the way, rest of the way. But he came back this year, and he just keeps getting better and better and better. The problem with that is, as Coach Callaway liked to say, you know, it's like having your five fingers and forming them into a fist. You got to have all of them. You know, you have only one of them. What are you going to do, poke somebody's eye out with it? You know, I mean, you need a fist. You need all five of them, and it does make it difficult to get the job done. But yeah, you can't say enough good things about how Chris Brown just keeps getting better and better and better and more solid, and his grades show it, and everything else. You just wish that was happening at the other spots. I think Austin Jackson has come along. I think Toa's snapping has hurt the rest of his game a little bit, and they're starting to substitute at right guard now with Elijah Vera Tucker. One would have liked to have seen more competing for offensive guard spots instead of just settling in with the guys that were there last year. I think it would have been more important. And I think, with Chuma's, health issues and all of that, I think having somebody who, was like a co-starter there the whole time, or is that a place where you could put Toa? There are just so many things, I think, that just didn't happen to make that offensive line situation more competitive. But Chris Brown has certainly, thrived in it, but I'm not sure for the rest of them. I think Austin Jackson he's just got so much going for him athletically that I think you're seeing that. But you need all five of them.
Yeah. Chris Brown was the guest on Trojans Live last night. Not the biggest talker in the world, but it shows that at least he's getting recognized.
He should come on and play he's got a reputation as a blues guitarist, but he's not going to talk your ear off. That's for sure.
No,
he's not going to tell you what he's thinking much, and so you don't. There isn't almost a way to draw out somebody like Chris. He's just not going to. So it's hard to make him, come alive in a lot of ways like you can, with bigger personalities. But his play makes you want to talk to him and find out what's going on, although he never changes. He never,
No.
You don't know if he's had a good game or a bad game or a good day or a bad day. He is just who he is. He's not going to, blow himself up at all. He's very, very down to, very, very downbeat sort of a guy and very, very down to earth. And, but having a great season.
All right, here's the next question we got. It's a voicemail.
Hi, Ryan. Hi, Dan. This is Matt from Ann Arbor. Watching the game, turned it off with about 5 minutes left to go. I don't think it really matters whether they win or lose at this point. It's kind of painfully clear that this is a team in search of a coach. You know, they have a lot of talent and just looks like it's listing, and they kind of look lost and no punch, no drive. This is a mediocre Cal team that decided they're going to be sort of chippy, and the best way to stop that would be to just be very disciplined and run, you know, aggressive, you know, effective plays against them, and they can't even do that. And I think the beginning sequence of the second half sort of epitomizes a lot of the issues with SC. You know, drop passes, a center penalty, a terrible snap, and then a fight on the sideline after. And really, the coaches are nowhere to be seen in the whole sequence. And you just feel the sort of air being punched out of the crowd in that whole, you know, the end of the second quarter and the beginning of the third quarter. And then it's Cal's game after that. And you see these kind of mediocre players being very cocky. You know, it's too bad because SC is so talented, and I think Helton has an important place in the history of SC as a somebody who kind of kept the sanity for a period. But it's very clear he's not a big time college head coach, as good as a person as he is. And I, you know, I'm sort of looking forward to the end of the season, to be honest. I appreciate all you guys do, and thanks for letting me vent a little here. Fight on, hang in there, Trojan fans and the players. Hoping you get better direction coming soon.
Yeah, hard to add. You know, they're seeing it clearly in Ann Arbor. You know, the picture is coming through just the way it is. I mean, you can't hide it. You can't gloss over it. You can't, you know, make it any better than it is. It is what it is, and can't, you know, disagree with anything you said. I mean, that's who they are right now. That's where they are.
Yeah, they are. And Matt in Ann Arbor, I know it's a little long, but I felt I needed him to let him vent a little bit there. So I thought it's good. He needed to get some stuff off his chest. Yep. But good points. He had a lot of good points in there.
Okay, I mean, it's pretty obvious. I mean, I don't think anybody is not seeing what's going on. I mean, that's not even the question anymore. You know? I mean, I think we saw it coming the way they were practicing. And you know, the inability to do what you had to do and to be able to do it early in the season against, you know, people you were playing. Obviously now, you should have beaten Stanford. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, that this team... Again, this team at worst ought to be 8-2, and yet, I mean, and that wouldn't have been great. People would have said, it's okay. And now you look at it and think, oh my God, how good would that have been? But let's face it, that, you know, you can give them the Texas loss, although Texas has turned out to be nice, and they are who they are. They're pretty good, and they get most of, you know, what they have out of themselves, and Utah, certainly when USC played them. But other than that, I mean, this is an 8-2 team right now. If they do anything right, if they're, you know, coached up at all, if they're, you know, on the same page, if they, you know, can run the ball even a little bit and have some discipline. But none of that seems to be enough. They're not where they need to be, and 5-5 is just awful. It's a horrendous
yeah.
season.
No way this team, this talented, should be have five losses, and you know, more coming, obviously. Mike and we got a couple more, and we'll let you go. I know we got to get to practice. Mike and Santa Barbara, I was intrigued by your comment in the incident analysis that USC players said how well coached Cal's team was. What specifically do they mean? For example, the fake field goal attempt was very poor play calling decision, but I'm wondering what specifically the players are talking about when they say Cal or insert any other team we lost to is better coached. Mike in Santa Barbara.
I think they do what they try to do. You know, they don't try to do things that they, you know, like the fake field goal, which is a desperation move. I mean, you didn't see Cal even down 14-0 and should have been down 27-0. They came back out and played. I mean, they gave themselves a chance to win. They didn't do anything dumb that took themselves out of the game, where USC did. But they liked the fact that Cal's kids did exactly what they were supposed to do. They disguised those defenses. They disguised those blitzes. They disguised those coverages. They were all on the same page. They didn't, you know, just give USC, they didn't give USC anything easy. Where USC gave Cal easy scores, Cal didn't do that for USC. They made USC earn them, and they, you know, stopped them from a couple of times when USC should have scored, or USC stopped itself, one or the other. But I just think the USC kids recognize that these guys played within themselves, they played within their system, and they watched Cal on film all week, and they were impressed that Cal, you know, competes, and Cal doesn't, you know, they don't do dumb stuff, and they do a lot of things well. And, you know, by saying what they're saying, the USC kids, it's very easy to read into it, and we don't. I mean, it's really easy to hear that with the USC kids saying that. You know, and you never hear the other team say that. The only thing you hear the other team say is USC's really talented, or they're good, or that's USC. But you never hear them say, man, USC's well coached, or they're disciplined, or they're tough, or they're physical. You don't hear any of that, ever. And that's too bad.
Yeah. All right, we got one last one for you, Dan, and we'll let you go. Here you go.
Hey, Ryan, this is Dan in Deplorable Dan. And the last time I sent you guys a little communication, your response was there didn't seem to be a question there, but you didn't expect or didn't seem like I was asking a question. Here's a question. I'm watching the USC Cal game, and I'm wondering, when are we going to make a coaching change? Is it tomorrow, or is it at the end of the year? Or I guess the real question is, do we have to sit through a UCLA and a Notre Dame loss, or are we going to do something? Because once again, another subpar performance. Thank you.
Okay, here's the problem, Deplorable Dan. USC may be certainly the only great program, maybe the only Power 5 program, that in a period of, you know, two seasons removed, fired two coaches in the middle of the season. That's never happened before in college football with what happened to Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian. So to have the third straight coach fired before the end of a season, you just can't do that. As much as people say, oh, my gosh, you got to stop this, I don't know that you can do that. I mean, you know, you might say, well, after the UCLA game, if do you go with an interim just to make it clear that there's going to be a change for the, you know, for the next year? I don't know. But the thought that you would be, what does that say about the people making the decisions, doing the hiring, if you have three straight coaches that don't make it to the end of the season? That's as negative as anything could be, and that's more negative about the people on top than it is the people getting fired, actually. So I would think you can't do it. I would think they put themselves in a situation where they absolutely can't do it, but you can understand why people were saying, why not? This week will be interesting. We'll know fairly early on Saturday afternoon how that last week of the season is going to go. And if USC loses and they're not bowl eligible, and they've got to beat Notre Dame to be bowl eligible, I don't know where that leads you.
Yeah. Not in a good place.
Not in a good place.
Well, it's funny.
It leaves you in the Rose Bowl, but that's the only place you're going to get close to the Rose Bowl unless you buy tickets. It wasn't that long ago. Those of us can remember, the response you would have is, oh, man, do we have to go to the Rose Bowl again this year?
That's true, yeah.
holy criminy, how far USC is from that.
And deplorable, Dan, we talked about, we don't think the administration wants to make a move, so they wouldn't make something during the season. I've been told that's the last thing they would ever do is do something during the season, because that's happened twice before. But that's when I did the radio interview earlier today, that's the first thing. If they lose UCLA, aren't they just going to fire him right then and there? And it's that certainly would make sense, but I don't know. I don't think they would even do it at that point. And this is what, when you look back, there's always big decisions that are being made. And there's always these head-scratching decisions made by people in power at USC. And when you look back, we've talked about this with Pat Hayden a number of times, Dan. So if I'm not mistaken, Pat Hayden hired two football coaches. You usually get one or two in your tenure, depending on how long you are. You had Steve Sarkisian, who lasted a year and a half. And then you have Clay Helton, who doesn't look like he's going to survive 3 years. That's a pretty bad track record for hiring coaches, I would say.
Well, you have three straight athletic directors who didn't have a minute of athletic director experience before they got hired at
USC. But they played football at USC, Dan. I don't know if you knew that.
Okay. I forgot. Yeah, that makes you an expert in running an athletic department that, however many $100 and some million athletic department. Yeah, that really gets you ready to do that. Yeah, yeah.
Mike Garrett at least worked in the athletic department before. And then, Pat Hayden, you could sort of see, he didn't have any experience. I think that's bad, but you could see, maybe some of his, he was still around the program a lot. Lynn Swann wasn't even in the state. I don't know when the last time he was on campus when they hired him. That's the most baffling one. It's really at this point, all right, who's the next football player we can hire? Three in a row, I think that's I think you got to call it quits. But Pat Hayden's record as far as, we've said this a million times, if you reverse every major decision he made, you'd be well better, better off. So having two football coaches hired under his watch and both of them, not lasting past 3 years would be pretty bad.
Yeah, it's just, they were making decisions for all the wrong reasons. And you can't do it that way. They've hired athletic directors for the wrong reasons. They've hired football coaches for the wrong reasons. That almost never works out. It did once, and Mike Garrett lost everybody he approached and ended up with Pete Carroll, who, recruited the job, basically, with a daughter who was, a freshman on campus. And they're lucky Pete Carroll, really wanted the job, but he basically recruited USC for that job. But, the track record at USC of hiring coaches is just way worse than the record on the field. So you got to do it for the right reasons. I'm not sure what is the right reason at USC right now. Do they want to still win national championships? They were saying that before the season started. I don't know. We're hearing that much lately. If you're in the bottom, 25% of the Pac-12, the worst conference in, Power Five football, you have really fallen a long way, and there's no excuse. It's not like, they've got sanctions or roster problems or they've had trouble recruiting or anything. It's all on you. It's all on everybody at USC that had anything to do with this program. It's on all of them.
Yeah.
And who wants to take the blame? I don't think we've got a lot of people. You don't become an academic bureaucrat at a really, great university like USC by taking the blame for anything. So, there's a lot of ducking going on around USC at this point in time, and that's a shame, because who takes it? Takes the worst end of it are the players, and they're the ones, you know, getting criticized, and they're the ones that get, you know, getting injured and all of that. And whether that has anything to do with how they practice or not, it's just, this is not a good, you know, this is not a good situation. And, you know, a program, a university like USC wants to project success and, you know, smart decision making in everything it does. And whether or not the football program ought to be the number one thing that people know about or think about is irrelevant. It is. And when it, you know, when it's going south, people say, what's wrong at USC? I mean, and obviously, there are a number of things you can point out to, you know, that are going wrong. And obviously, they've got the, a lot of great things going. I mean, the, you know, the highest, the biggest fundraising program in the history of higher education in America. That's up to $7.5 billion for the, you know, the campaign for USC. There's so many great things going on, and the campus is unbelievable, and it's just alive, and you know, the buildings and the programs and all of those things that say so many good things about USC. But a lot of people know about USC through football, and that message that's you know, going out is not a good one for USC.
No, it's not. I mean, I brought, so it was homecoming this past weekend, and shout out to Trader Joe's. We went over there to University Village, and they were great to us over there, and showed them around. And the people, some of my friends hadn't been on campus for, you know, a dozen years or more, some people since they graduated, you know, 25 years ago, and to see everything, walking through University Village, you know, checking out, like, you can go to Trader Joe's, you can come down from your, that's a dorm, and you can go downstairs and go and buy something to eat at Trader, like, yes, you can do all that. And I showed them the bags and everything from, and it's just, it's, there's a lot of impressive stuff, obviously, going around at USC, and the football team isn't one of them right now, but I mean, it could be, and it's that you're saying they made bad decisions, but they made decisions for the wrong reasons. And when you do that, that usually comes back to haunt you. And that's what we're seeing from USC right now. A lot of bad decisions that were made for the wrong reasons before are coming to roost. What did you really need to hire a coach with no experience? Like, no, you didn't need to do that. Maybe it would work out. It's obviously not. So that's a bad decision that was made over 3 years ago. And, you know, now we're dealing with this mess right now.
But a big part of that is USC didn't trust itself to go out and find the right coach. So they went with the easy decision because they knew they had someone who wouldn't embarrass them the way the two previous coaches did. So that's, you know, that's a reason, and it's not a bad reason. It's just not the right reason for hiring the next football coach, you know. But if you say, well, who around here could possibly get it right after the last two hirings and firings, that's a way to look at it. I mean, but you probably need to get more professional with the people who are doing the hiring. And you already know the people doing the hiring don't have any experience doing it. I mean, I think one of the hardest things, if you get a, and one of the reasons I always have to be convinced that hiring a coordinator, the best coordinator in the country as your head coach, is they've never put together a staff. They've never hired a staff. And hiring a staff is about as important as anything you could do as a head football coach. The same thing applies to athletic directors. If you've never hired anybody, how can you possibly be a head, an athletic director where you've got, you know, several hundred employees directly under you, and you've got some, you know, you've got people who are the highest paid people in the university working for you. You have to get those hires right. I mean, let's face it, the football coach and the basketball coach are your highest paid, you know, of the, USC's the largest employer in Los Angeles. And yet they've got two people that are so highly paid, you know, of the, you know, however many, 50 or 60,000 employees, the two by far highest profile, highest paid are, you know, the football and basketball coach. You have to get those hires right. And you can't be a rookie at making hires and expect to get them right. It's really hard. There aren't that many great football and basketball coaches. And that's what they're paying you to do. But if you've never done it before, how would you expect those people to be able to get that right?
Yeah.
You shouldn't. They're not gonna.
No. Yeah. That's I don't know if much is going to change until you actually bring in a sitting athletic director who knows what he's doing. I'm just not sure anything else is going to change, Dan. So it's probably not, you know, since Lynn Swann's been on the job, what, less than 2 years now, right? Like, that's probably not changing anytime soon. So I don't know. We'll see. Well, we didn't want to make this a depressing podcast, but we got to get going to practice. But I want to thank you, Dan, for coming on. Lots of great questions. We will get a column up. I'll help Dan with some of these questions and get them to him and put up the questions we didn't get to up in a column as Dan normally does late in the week. And wanted to thank SeatGeek and both Trader Joe's for sponsoring this episode of the Peristyle Podcast. We appreciate all the sponsorship and allowing us to keep this going and rolling out content for all of you. And Dan, I guess we'll see you over on practice a little bit.
See you practice.
Should be okay. Interesting. Levi Jones watch. Take care. Or lack of Levi Jones watch.
Yeah, man. Where'd he go?
All right. That's Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.